regular co-hosts, Amy Bird, the housewife theologian and West Virginian housewife par excellence, and Todd Pruitt, who is still, I believe, the pastor of Covenant Presbyterian Church in Harrisonburg, Virginia. It's becoming a long, long pulpit ministry for Todd.
And my friendship with you is becoming seemingly very long as well, Carl.
Yes, so. Yes. Friendships with me a day is as a thousand years, and a thousand years is as a day. We're recording this on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving at a very interesting point in the culture of North American evangelicalism. Serious allegations of plagiarism have been made by radio show host Janet Mefford against megachurch pastor Mark Driscoll. It is not our place to comment on those specific allegations in this podcast, but we want to use this incident as a platform for discussing the importance of a, what you might call, free press for evangelicalism. On blogs, on media, everybody who speaks is to an extent owned or dependent upon somebody else, donors, constituency, whatever. It means that there's a limit to what any particular person can say. And that's why it's very important to have a diversity of voices out there to hold us to account. We at the Alliance, we don't have a very big constituency. We don't have a huge a constituency holding us to account, but there are certain things that I'm pretty sure the puppet master would not be very happy about us saying on the program. And that's why it's important that there are other blogs, other podcasts, other places out there where alternative voices are heard. In the wider secular world, a free press is absolutely crucial to a healthy democracy. Everybody should have the right to speak. Not everybody deserves to be heard, but everybody should have the right to speak. And that same thing really applies within the subculture of evangelicalism. So we want to talk today about the importance of independent voices, of multiple voices within the evangelical subculture as a means of holding us all to account. Amy, you're a new author. Plagiarism, of course, is something that all authors are required to avoid. You're also getting a taste of what it's like to put something out there in public and get pushback, some of it hard and very critical on what you say. What are your sort of thoughts on freedom of the press in evangelicalism?
Well, first of all, with the plagiarism part, I mean, that's a huge concern of mine. I actually think that I cite references sometimes just because I'm fearful of taking somebody else's property. I read a lot, and you're shaped by what you read. You want to make sure you give credit where credit is due. I'm very thankful that my editors have worked well with me in that area. But also, you know, it doesn't feel good when someone's given my work a harsh critique, but I'm thankful that people are actually taking the ideas that I'm writing about and wrestling with them and coming up with their conclusions. I'm actually more bothered when I'll see a review of my book that is just kind of fluffy, light review, and it doesn't really talk about any of the conversation that the reader was having with themselves while they were reading it. I would rather them disagree with me and actually understand the points that I'm making than to not critically read it and use discernment while they're reading it. Does that make sense?
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Todd, do you have any reflections on that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm the low man on the totem pole here. I only write a periodic article. I don't have books, and so I'm not fabulously wealthy like you two. From those massive book royalties that I'm sure you both get, but I think what you're both hitting on, anyone that has a stake in teaching, writing, preaching, any kind of leadership within the church, needs to be welcoming to critique and to accountability, and. What I'm concerned about in the situation, Carl, that you brought up, that we're all kind of waiting around looking to see how it's going to turn out, what I'm concerned about is that I perceive an automatic defensive machine move into place when someone who's reached a very high status is called to account for something. I'm trying to be very careful in the words I'm using. I'm sure you can tell. But what I see is a resistance to the critique of anyone who has reached a certain level of notoriety within the evangelical world, and in this case, young, restless, reformed, the reformed subculture, et cetera, as if once you reach the status, it's hands off.
Yeah, and we could be very cynical as well at this point and say, you know, once you reach a certain status, there's a certain amount of money tied right. up in this, and money twists everything.
Right.
Now, in terms of accountability, there are formal mechanisms for accountability, or there should be within individual churches. We should have elders, congregations, if you're a Presbyterian, presbyteries holding our feet to the fire. But there are also those informal mechanisms of accountability. You know, at a very simple level, my wife critiques my sermons for me. She holds me to accountable on those things.
Right.
When you get out there and become something of a media celebrity, those informal mechanisms of accountability tend to drop away somewhat, because there are a lot of people out there with a vested interest in your success.
Right.
Now, the secret of great leadership is not to surround yourself with yes men, but when you're bringing in the big bucks, you will tend to find that you are surrounded by yes men, because they are enjoying the money, the kudos, the credit that you bring to them or to their publishing company or whatever. And they will not hold you accountable in the way that you should be.
Right, right. And that's why every person out there who is becoming well known as an evangelical, either through their writing or their preaching or what have you, is directly accountable to their church. And hopefully that church is a part of a denomination where there is real, formal, structured accountability, so that I'm not left on my own to be quote-unquote accountable to some hand-selected board of directors who are megachurch pastors in other states.
No, no. And I also think it's where it's important that, you know, I've used this term on email with you guys, I know, what I would call craft blogs, just to give it a cool beer kind of connotation. You know, Amy runs a craft blog, The Housewife Theologian. Amy is not particularly beholden to anyone.
Right.
She can speak her mind. Now, one hopes that the elders at her church will pull her in if she gets out of hand. But on the other hand, she's an important independent voice in the wider world. Now, there are some loonies out there running their blogs. They're more your sort of, I suppose, your Bud Light
blogs. In the basement in their pajamas.
Right.
So you can learn fairly quickly who are the individual independent bloggers who have good things to say. But they bring something important to the conversation.
Right.
Because they're prepared to say the things that, if you know, if you've got $10,000, $20,000, $100,000, $200,000 invested in a guy, you're going to cut him a lot of slack on his behavior. The independent voice out there owes nothing to anybody or almost anybody, and can speak the truth.
I think it's important too in all this to recognize something that I think everybody wants, and that's unity. But we have to ask ourselves, you know, what is our unity in? Is it in an establishment, an organization, or even certain people, or a brand even? And then, or is it in the revealed truth in God's word?
Yeah.
And that's where we find our unity. And, you know, even in both of those instances, unity comes with consequences. You know, wherever we take our stand that our unity is defined by, we're going to have consequences there.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why I don't have any problem with Janet Mefford on one level doing and saying what she did, because to me, if she's speaking the truth, it'll come out. If she's not speaking the truth, she'll find herself on the receiving end of those who can provide evidence to show that she's spoken falsehood. What was so odd was that people seem to be intimidated by the very fact she's spoken out. You know, had calls for boycotts of her show, this kind of thing. Well, you know, if she's telling lies, sure, boycott her show. But let's wait and find out first. Mm-hmm. She has the right to speak.
Yeah.
And either way, if it's a truth or a lie, she's got consequences there.
Exactly.
She?
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. If it's true, then it's important that she shone a light on something. If it's not true, then she'll be marginalized. And if it's not true, that would be the right thing for her to be marginalized. But if it is true, then we must never have within our own ranks as evangelicals someone who is above accountability, because that becomes very dangerous.
Well, and I think the whole T.D. Jakes thing's demonstrated to us all that Mark Driscoll is above accountability.
Yes. Yes.
You know, the nice farewell he received from the Gospel Coalition said it all.
Right.
They couldn't afford to blow the money that that kind of guy brings them, even as he left them. It had to be done in a nice way that left the door open.
Right. Right.
Well, it kind of reduces people then, this branding, to someone to manipulate, really.
Yeah.
And so you see that in all the spin coming out with this on both sides. You know, we're being told what to think.
Yeah. Well, I suspect within the next week or so, there will be much more clarity on this very issue, because if there are clear facts to back up the accusation, then it's going to go one way. And although we don't know, even if there are clear facts to back up the accusation, my fear is that there won't be real accountability.
And does anyone care?
Does anybody care? Yeah.
If you like, the Nietzschean Ubermensch, the Nietzschean Superman of evangelicalism, are beyond good and evil, and they determine what is morality. That would be the worst case scenario coming out from this.
And that very reality, and this is important to bear, just as we kind of wrap this session up, is that it's disheartening to me that this happens within the broadly speaking kind of reformed subculture here, because the reformed ethic, and even more specifically, the Presbyterian ethic, is to guard against such cults of personality. Now, it can still happen because we're still sinners. But our confessions of faith in the Reformed tradition, our Book of Church Order, goes quite a way to mitigate against this sort of cult of personality, the untouchable Superman. And may we honor that ethic that is drawn out in our confessions and in our Book of Church Order. So, well, thanks to Carl, thanks to Amy for this helpful discussion. I hope that it's been helpful for you. I hope that we can learn lessons from this as we go forward about the importance of honesty, the importance of accountability, the importance of openness within the church and within the wider evangelical culture. You have been listening to Mortification of Spin Bully Pulpit, and we will talk to you again next time.
This has been a Bully Pulpit from the Mortification of Spin, a podcast of the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals. And just for listening, you deserve something. How about a free MP3 set of four messages entitled